Good morning and Happy New Year. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, January 2nd. Let's talk about the decade that just passed. Appearing on Meet the Press last week, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich called the just-completed decade one of self-deception, naivete, with bubbles galore such as in technology, housing, Wall Street, and government. I'd say it was a decade characterized by the little guy getting crushed. It was also a time when real heroes emerged, first in the actions of firemen and passengers on 9/11, and then U.S. military in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Even here, however, it was a decade of unfulfilled objectives, such as in the failure to take out al-Qaeda's two main symbols, bin Laden and Zawahiri, or the failure to stop North Korea's and Iran's intentions on the nuclear weapons front. Forget Wall Street, it was a lost decade on the geopolitical front, and our leaders are left with staggering challenges and an ever-present threat that one day we'll be shaken to the core, even worse than 9/11. Just 2 weeks ago, I wrote in my Week in Review column, quote, without giving away all my thoughts on 2010, I'll just add for now that due to geopolitical reasons, there will come a time next year when we'll feel about as low as you can get, close quote. 6 days later, Christmas Day, we almost saw a manifestation of this in the failed attempt on a Northwest Airlines plane heading for Detroit. Let me just jump to my main thesis on this new year. We will be convulsed by geopolitical events of immense proportions. But let's look in detail at the past decade in financial terms. First, economist Paul Krugman of the New York Times summed it up. The last 10 years were the big zero. Krugman writes, it was a decade with basically zero job creation. It was a decade with zero economic gains for the typical family. It was a decade of zero gains for homeowners, even if they bought early. Right now, housing prices adjusted for inflation are roughly back to where they were at the beginning of the decade. I just have to note myself that Las Vegas is a prime example of this point. Just 5% above levels of January 2000. Krugman writes, last and least for most Americans, it was a decade of zero gains for stocks, even without taking inflation into account. Remember the excitement when the Dow first topped 10,000 and best-selling books like Dow 36,000 predicted that the good times would just keep rolling? Well, that was back in 1999. Last week, the market closed at 10,520. So there's a lot of nothing going on in measures of economic progress or success. Funny how that happened. For as the decade began, there was an overwhelming sense of economic triumphalism in America's business and political establishments, a belief that we, more than anyone else in the world, knew what we were doing. Krugman writes, let me quote from a speech that Lawrence Summers, then Deputy Treasury Secretary, now the Obama administration's top economist, gave in 1999. Quote, if you ask why the American financial system succeeds, he said, at least my reading of the history would be that there is no innovation more important than that of generally accepted accounting principles. It means that every investor gets to see information presented on a comparable basis, that there is discipline on company managements in the way they report and monitor their activities. And he went on to declare that there is an ongoing process that really is what makes our capital market work and work as stably as it does. So, here's what Mr. Summers, and to be fair, just about everyone in a policy-making position at the time, believed in 1999. America has honest corporate accounting. This lets investors make good decisions and also forces management to behave responsibly, and the result is a stable, well-functioning financial system. What percentage of all this turned out to be true? Zero. What was truly impressive about the decade past, however, was our unwillingness as a nation to learn from our mistakes. Krugman adds, even as the dot-com bubble deflated, credulous bankers and investors began inflating a new bubble in housing. Even after famous admired companies like Enron and WorldCom were revealed to have been Potemkin corporations with facades built out of creative accounting, analysts and investors believed banks' claims about their own financial strength and bought into the hype about investments they didn't understand. Even after triggering a global economic collapse and having to be rescued at taxpayers' expense, bankers wasted no time going right back to the culture of giant bonuses and excessive leverage. So let's bid a not-at-all-fond farewell to the Big Zero, the decade in which we achieved nothing and learned nothing. That was Paul Krugman. It's been a decade where Wall Street was king, and as I mentioned, some of the following comments of former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker a few weeks ago, they bear repeating. This time as presented by Patrick Hosking of the London Times. Quote, as Paul Volcker put it, the greatest piece of financial innovation of the past few decades has not been the credit default swap or any of the other fancy derivatives conjured up by the industry's energetic rocket scientists, but the humble cash machine. Volcker argued that the mushrooming in the relative size of the financial services industry in recent decades was not because it was creating extra value for the world, but simply because it was paying itself much, much more. His grumpy denunciation of modern-day wholesale financial services at a Wall Street Journal conference was magisterial. Cue hundreds of bankers shuffling their feet in embarrassed silence. Lord Turner of Eckenswell, the chairman of the Financial Services Authority, was spot on when he argued that some of what the city, Hosking referring to London, does is socially useless. In some ways, it is worse than useless, depriving other industries of our brightest and most energetic graduates. The banks are perhaps the victims of their particular activity. They deal in that most commoditized of products, money. A loan is a loan is a loan. Beyond a few bells and whistles, there is no honest way to dress it up to make it better. So some banks have strayed into dishonest ways instead. William Rees-Mogg, also of the London Times, added his 2 cents. Mr. Volcker opened his speech with the words, "Wake up, gentlemen. I can only say that your response to the crisis is inadequate. I wish that somebody would give me some shred of neutral evidence about the relationship between financial innovation recently and the growth of the global economy. Just one shred." And so, it was a decade where we faced terrorism and then war on one end and financial terrorism on the other, the planning of weapons of mass destruction on the books of banks, pension funds, and municipalities, with government left to clean it up, hardly the perfect situation. It was a decade where financial innovation killed us. And yet, name one individual is responsible for the mess that has truly paid the price, not including the latest generation of Ponzi scheme artists, who on Wall Street, aside from perhaps losing their position and some net worth, really suffered for their manipulation of the markets solely for personal gain. Back in January 2000, when Americans were asked for a USA Today Gallup poll whether the country was headed in the right direction, 69% said yes. The same poll last month had 25% believing so. But then there is this AP survey just out that asks if Americans are optimistic about 2010, and 72% said yes to that one. The questions aren't the same, but they are similar. Sense of the direction of the country versus how you and I will fare. To me, it's the same principle as the one where we want government to do this, that, and the other thing, but we don't want to pay for it or sacrifice in any fashion. You can't have it both ways, but we keep trying. It's not an admirable trait. Much like the housing bubble, it smacks of a delusional mind, not a band of brothers, but a band of selfish jerks. So let's look at the decade in numbers. 10 years ago, the Dow Jones was 11,497. Today it's 10,428, minus 9%. The S&P fell 24% over the decade. NASDAQ down 44%. The S&P 500 posted an average decrease of 0.9% a year since 1999, even including dividends, the first negative return for a decade since data began in 1927. Meaning, investors who put 10,000 in stocks on December 31st, 1999 have $9,090 now, while the same amount in 10-year Treasury notes would have grown to about $18,000 following a 6.1% annualized return, according to Bloomberg. A 10,000 investment in the Reuters Jefferies CRB index of 19 raw materials increased 3.3% a year to $13,803, while gold futures did rise 14% a year, turning 10,000 into 37,852. Not bad. One further evidence of how bad a decade it was, though, for equities. Check this out. General Electric started the decade at $51.58. Today it's $15.13. Walmart was $69.13. Today $53.45. Microsoft was $52.53. Today $30.48. Just further examples of the failure of buy and hold that through the 90s held everyone in such good stead. Then again, if you held Apple the entire decade, you would have picked up a cool 720%. But before we look at 2009 specifically, just a reminder of what I started off last year's review with. It was about 2008. The carnage then, with the Dow down 34%, its worst year since 1931, and the S&P down 39%, its worst year since 1937. Tokyo's Nikkei was down 42% in 2008, its worst ever. It went on and on. But 2009 was the comeback after the fall. The Dow Jones finished up 18.8%, S&P 500 up 23.5%, NASDAQ up 43.9%, and the Russell 2000 up 25.2%. But the 2009 return numbers, the best since 2003, tell only half the story. From the depths of despair on March 9, stocks staged a stupendous rally without as much as a 10% correction. The Dow Jones since March 9 is up 59%, the S&P 500 up 65%, NASDAQ up 79%, and the Russell 2000 up 82%. How many investors missed this move? A lot. And 2009 was a huge comeback year around the world. In local currencies, Tokyo's Nikkei up 19%, London's FTSE up 22%, and Frankfurt's DAX index up 24%. And then you had the BRIC countries, Brazil up 83%, Russia up 129%, India up 81%, China up 80%. All the above staged spectacular rallies off the March lows as well, with London's FTSE, to pick one, up 54%. To complete the comparison of 08 to 09, some of the Lipper fund indices for 09, large cap growth up 38.5% and international up 35.3%. But we still have ways to go to return to where we were at the highs of October 2007. So how did I do in terms of my predictions for 2009? Not bad, not bad at all. In fact, spectacularly well, frankly. In terms of the bottom line, I said the Dow Jones and S&P 500 would advance 20% and NASDAQ 30%. It's this last bit that really distinguishes my call over other bulls. And whereas some strategists were scrambling last March at the market lows, remember the S&P was off 25% year-to-date as of March 9, I stuck to my guns all year. But what really sets me apart is that not only did I call the stock market, I also had the direction right in 2008, incidentally. But at least for now, I nailed the bottom in the housing market, April, May, which I came up with in the fall of 2008. But what do I think about the year ahead? In one line, stocks will finish the year in negative territory, with the S&P 500 and Dow Jones down 12%, NASDAQ off 6%. I fall firmly into camp that the deleveraging process for the consumer is far from over and that spending won't return until the job picture improves, which I just don't see happening in any big way. I also don't see housing coming back significantly in terms of median home prices, owing to the still serious foreclosure issue, as well as a ton of option-arm mortgages that will be resetting at much higher rates later in the year. It's a year that's also going to be dominated to a great extent by further issues on the state and local government front, as in revenues won't nearly meet expenses, which will lead to even further layoffs. The big stories are California, New York, and New Jersey. Regarding my home turf, it was revealed this week the state revenues are off 14%, and our new governor wants to cut spending 25%. No way the state legislature will allow that, but it also doesn't mean New Jersey or any other state, for that matter, is going to be doing any hiring. It's about deficits, and this is an issue worldwide. 2010 is about still stagnant, if not falling, wages. This year we'll also see an ever-increasing anger with government and the healthcare debate, and this will best be manifested in what is going to be an unruly midterm election. 2009 was about survival, and as I've selected Ben Bernanke as my Person of the Year, just as Time Magazine did, he does deserve a lot of the credit. 2010 is going to be about shattered expectations and dreadful pictures on television that will depress the hell out of us. It's going to be about Iran, for sure, but also a heavy dose of Pakistan as it hurtles towards collapse with unfathomable consequences. Well, there's your happy outlook for 2010. You can get a lot more details in my Week in Review column on stocksandnews.com. I'll be back with you next Saturday, January 9th. Have a great week.